Well, good day and welcome to another episode here of the Disaster Podcast. I'm your host, Jamie Davis, the Pod Medic, and we've got a pretty fun episode for you tonight. I'm looking forward to getting an update from one of our regular friends here on the show. But before we get into that, we've got to bring in the most regular of all of them, Sam Bradley.
That would be me, buried in snow in the Front Range of Colorado.
Wow.
Got at least a foot between, well, it was supposed to be 24 hours, but it continued into today. But it's the nice, fluffy, you know, falling snow you think of when you think of Christmas scenes and stuff. So it's kind of neat, but we got at least a foot because it's still on top of things. So we got some cleaning to do. So our meteorologist for tonight is Miss Becky DePoglin. And what is up with that, Becky? Are we done with it? Or is it moving through? Or what's going on?
Yeah, I mean, it should be winding down for you guys. And I just have to say, Sam, I'm jealous. It's been such a dud of a winter here in the Northeast. So I wish you could send it my way, but I don't think that's going to be happening.
I totally agree, Becky. It is like, I'm tired of 60 degree weather in February.
Yeah, the one day we had was nice. That's when we last spoke, which was last Thursday. We were gearing up for some really, really warm weather, which we had Monday, Tuesday. And then we're about to turn colder over the next couple of days. So that system that is out bringing tons of snow to Colorado is going to translate all the way across the country and bring just a host of impacts pretty much countrywide. So tonight through Wednesday, there's going to be snow already falling in certain places across the panhandles of Texas, through Oklahoma, parts of Kansas into Missouri. A fairly narrow swath of snow there, but pretty impactful where it is falling. And then it is only February, but we are talking severe weather already. So severe storms certainly possible for parts of the south and the southeast, both tomorrow, which is Wednesday, and then all the way into Thursday as well. Flash flooding is a possibility, some damaging winds. And then the rest of the snow kind of later on in the week is going to track across the Great Lakes, unfortunately stay well north of both Jamie and I. We're not going to catch a flake here, I don't think. What we will have, though, is ice and sleet and just a mess. So,
the
Sam,
nasty.
You're not going to send it our way. Yeah.
Well, I could send just some snowballs, but I don't think they'll last till we get to the East Coast. And I think I've never heard Easterners complain about lack of snow. That, to me, just is kind of weird. So you'll just have to come back and visit Colorado. That's just all there is to it. So our guest tonight is our other meteorologist, but he's not in that role tonight. And speaking of snow, we're talking about that tonight, Mr. Kyle Nelson. I imagine you guys got a good dump up there, didn't you?
Well, hey, Sam, and good evening to everyone on the podcast. Meteorologist Kyle Nelson coming to you. And yes, Sam, we did get this couple inches of snow out of this most recent blast of winter weather. Not as much as you got down in the Front Range, only about 6 inches or so here in the valley where Aspen is, but we're looking forward to our bigger system coming in later on this week.
So what does that mean in terms of snow? How much more are we looking at here?
Well, at least in our area, it's looking to be definitely closer to a foot, if not more, especially once you get up to the higher elevations. The mountains that are favored under northwest flow, so that's going to be the central mountains of Colorado, including Sunlight, Aspen, the Roaring Fork Valley there, as well as Steamboat Springs. They're calling for total measurements by the weekend's end in feet of snow, not inches out here.
Wow, the skiers are loving it. Love that fresh stuff. Well, we are talking about a snow-related event, as we have the last few years, called the X Games. And you are very involved in that on a number of levels, and I want to talk about all those different roles. But first, talk about what it is, and then give us an overview. I think my guess would be planning for 2021 starts tomorrow, because I know you guys have a lot of pre-planning to do. So tell us about the X Games and how they started and what they are and all of that.
Oh, heck yeah. So the Winter X Games is what the topic is tonight. And as Sam hinted at, I have several roles that have evolved throughout my career in Colorado with regard to that event. But just kind of as a quick hit overview, the Winter X Games, it just celebrated its 19th year in Aspen, and there's 4 more years on the contract beyond that. And it is the second largest winter sports event, second only to the Winter Olympics. So we bring in athletes from around the world. When I say we, I'm referring to our partners at ESPN and Disney that host the Winter X Games and that bring those athletes in from around the world to showcase their talent in the beautiful scenery of Aspen, Colorado, actually at Buttermilk Ski Resort, where I've worked for the past five seasons. So with regard to that, we're going to look at things in a couple different lenses this year, both from the role on ski patrol as well as from the county incident management team where I work as well.
Excellent. Well, let's start with one of those, your ski patrol coordination role and how that interacts with the county incident management folks.
Yes, there's a lot of overlap. Just to kind of put things in context a little bit and why we have a incident management team at the county level, which is largely unheard of for a lot of rural counties such as Pitkin County, where Aspen is located. We have a year-round population of just about 18 to 19,000, depending on how you count it. And so for a county of that size to have a fully developed, fully flushed out type 3 incident management team, that's pretty rare. And Winter X Games and several other events that we host year-round. But for Winter X, we bring in over 100,000 people physically to the base of Buttermilk over a four-day period. So that's more than five times our county population year-round, plus combine that with all the additional resort staff and folks that work the event. And so we have a really large population in a very, very small space. And that provides some unique challenges. So one of the things that we do and that I focus on is the ski patrol coordination side. So I've been a pro ski patroller in Aspen for 5 years now. And what one of my roles is to actually work with the X Games medical director that they bring in, Dr. Joel Buzzy from the East Coast. And he will kind of give and coordinate all of the entities that are involved. So it's not just ski patrol, but local EMS and fire departments, the local hospital, Aspen Valley Hospital, as well as the athletic trainers and all the coaches and other medical staff that the athletes will bring with them as well. So it's getting all those providers to work together under a common set of protocols and practices and play nice in that sandbox or snowbox or snow globe, if you will, so that if something should happen to either a spectator or an athlete, we can provide an effective response for them and get them to definitive care.
That sounds like a huge amount of planning. Jamie, you had a question.
Yeah, you know, hearing you talk about the influx of people into your county and how it, you know, affects the overall county population when compared to the year-round residents, it brought me back to the discussion we had a few months ago about the Area 51 influx and, you know, the challenges that county in Nevada faced with a perspective influx of people that they couldn't predict. But this is something that Aspen does on a regular basis. What was it like to, you know, what's Aspen done over the years to make that incident management team, you know, be able to cope with this on a regular basis? There's a lot of planning, I'm sure, that goes into that.
Definitely, Jamie. Planning is absolutely key. And you kind of said it jokingly at the beginning, but it's absolutely true. We're already planning for X Games, Winter X Games Aspen 2021. I was not, of course, privy to the first time X Games was in Aspen, but reading back on some of the archived after action reports and through some of the you know, the different forms that were used to help manage that incident, it's really, really striking to see how quickly we evolved as a valley and as a community to not just embrace X Games, but to help manage it more effectively. So the sheriff's office being the lead agency, the Pitkin County Sheriff's Office, they worked at to the best of their capacity early on, but eventually they found that it had grown beyond what the agencies in the valley could manage. So as X Games grew in popularity and as more bed space became available throughout the Roaring Fork Valley where Aspen is, we knew that we needed to step up and we needed to provide a larger coordination structure that is an incident management team for a planned event of this magnitude. And so We have, again, like I said, a type 3 incident management team that's managed and staffed at the county level. And so we bring in experts from different areas, from everything from logistics, operations, finance, planning, and intelligence, both from within the Valley, as well as several private sector and public sector partners from local, state, and federal levels that come in and provide that expertise and that command, control, that coordination piece so that if something were to not go as planned, we have folks in place ready to assist with that.
Jamie, you have a question, and then I have one for you, Kyle.
No, I just asked it.
Oh, I thought you threw another one up there. Well, that kind of begs the question. If you have a good, I can just see you pouring through all the old incident reports because you're such a detail-oriented person. But if you have a sense of what those first couple of years were like, how much has it changed? How much? Yeah, obviously, they take the incident reports and they see what's been done, what worked well, and what didn't work well, and how are we going to change it for next year? Do you have a sense of how much it's changed, and also in terms of how many people are showing up for this thing?
Well, Sam, it's changed quite a bit. It's evolved a lot. So as technology has just evolved so rapidly over the past 20 years, we've seen a complete and total shift in the ease of coordination that we have with bringing in our partners, both from the local and state and even federal agencies, integrating them into our overall communications plan or communications system that's become so robust within our Valley that's allowed that infrastructure to be built out and support that public safety communications. In addition to our private sector partners, Verizon, AT&T, and others putting specific infrastructure in place at the base of Buttermilk, not just for day-to-day capacity challenges, but also during those large venue events that we will host year-round. That allows us to not just give people a way to communicate and to share their stories, but also for us to be able to communicate with them. And how we communicate with people that are on the venue or coming to the venue has evolved. Now with the advent of communications management systems and dashboards such as Everbridge, Rave, and others, we use Everbridge for the county, and it's all pre-planned with templates for everything from messaging from transportation to event schedule changes to weather and safety concerns and anything that could adversely impact someone's ability to fully enjoy that event and their time here in Aspen. We have the ability to reach out to them through one or more methods. And I think the biggest change has just been the collaboration and the partnerships that we've developed. It can kind of get to be an old record, and you have the word, I heard the word complacency several times come up from our incident commanders at their at our command staff and operations briefings. But it is true where we tend to fall back on old ways or it's just another X Games. But learning from the previous events and being able to have that context allows us to keep growing and keep moving forward. And every year with our hot washes, we keep innovating and growing and moving forward every year. I think one of the coolest things that I saw, just to close this out, on a 911 side of things, as a 911 dispatcher in the county, this year we added points within the venue that were directly in our computer-aided dispatcher, our CAD system, and we had a caller with a medical complaint within the venue. They didn't know where they were, but we were able to get a location from their cell phone that mapped to that nearest point that we had added this year. And that's actually where they were on the venue. And so that cut down response time dramatically. And so it's changes like that through the innovators and the bright minds that we have on our team and within the county that allow us to continue to grow.
That's awesome. Becky, you had a question.
As long as Skype doesn't keep kicking me off. I'm curious what like an average day looks like for you, Kyle. When you're not responding to a call, what are you doing?
Okay, I was going to say that's a loaded question otherwise.
To be specific, yes, during the X Games.
Absolutely. So during the X Games, I'll give you two perspectives. The first is as ski patrol coordinator. So first thing, getting on, typically We're arriving 2 hours before the venues open for athletes, with our primary role as ski patrollers being athlete medical, as well as maintaining mountain operations, because the ski area, that is Buttermilk, doesn't shut down just because X Games is there. We still have all of our normal day-to-day operational challenges and concerns as well. So from there, we suit up, get on the chairlift, and we meet up top, we rally, we have a plan for the day, we look at any overnight schedule changes that may affect our operations and get an initial plan for the day. And we issue out all of our equipment that will cycle through, such as radios that X Games brings in and any other equipment. We look at what needs to go on venue, what time venues are opening and operating, and we get those first folks out the door. And then what me and my core team start doing on ski patrol is we start getting ready for all of our visiting patrollers to come in. So this event far exceeds the capacity of Buttermilk Ski Patrol to staff the event and the mountain. And so we'll bring in anywhere from 5 to 15 patrollers a day from our sister resorts, Snowmass Highlands and Aspen Mountain, to assist with us staffing and managing that event. And so once they're on site, we'll brief them in, get them going and into the rotation with our staff. And then from there, the day largely just follows the schedule. We rotate folks through responses in venue and on the mountain as necessary. And then as events close, we demobilize folks, we send them home and rotate them out. And then we get ready for the nighttime events and everything that happens under the spotlights.
So you don't get a whole lot of sleep, do you? That's a lot of stuff in a day there.
It's a lot to do, but I have to give an incredible shout out and my heartfelt thanks to Mark Campion, Carrie Danielson, Joe Sprick, and you know, Chris Halsey, and all the other folks on our team from Buttermilk Ski Patrol, Lisa Hicks, that help me every year to make this event better. So they are able to take on tasks such as managing equipment, doing the logistical side of things. Mark Campion helps me with operations and incident management overall. Chris Halsey is our patrol director who handles a lot of the liaison work at the high level with X Games. If we need something, he's my go-to guy. And then Lisa helps with the scheduling of all of our visiting patrollers and managing that side of it. So it's a team effort all the way around. And that's just on the ski patrol side of things for X Games.
Wow. Okay, so we got questions coming in. Becky, I hope your ghost won't, your Skype ghost won't throw you off here.
I just actually think it'd be helpful for people who may be newer listeners for Kyle just to give a brief background of, like, I guess how you, I don't even know, just like, what do you, how did you get to be this, you know, incredible person that helps out with this huge event? Like, what are your qualifications, I guess? Not that I'm questioning, I'm just actually curious how you got here.
No, it's okay, Becky. I see how it is. No,
no, it's awesome. But
for me, it was a combination of serendipity and having a background that supported me launching into this role. Four years ago, our director at the time for Buttermilk, Robin Perry, he approached me after my first season on the Hill, start of the second season, and he said, "Hey, you really seem to be engaged in this whole X Games thing. You did incident management and emergency management back in Michigan. Your background in meteorology gives you a good hold on kind of how the weather drives and affects this event that's outdoors at the base of the hill." And he said, "Well, what do you think about running X Games for a ski patrol?" And me, being an ambitious second-year patroller, said, "Yeah, absolutely. Why not?" And it grew from there. I was greatly humbled my first year doing that, but I had great mentors on the patrol who had done it before. And it's evolved from not just the medical side of things and incident management side, but it's grown from there into now working with the county incident management team with my evolving role on the public safety side. So I get to play and be there on the mountain and see the athletes and respond to things, say, in the super pipe, on the landing of Big Air, or on the features of slope style, everything from that all the way to taking the call in the 911 center, depending on where I'm at, all the way to helping to manage the ambulance assets that are on venue and off-site from the incident management team side. So depending on where I'm at or which hat, helmet, or vest I'm wearing on that particular day, all playing a a role in X Games and just supporting the success of the event.
Jamie.
Yeah, you were talking about bringing in other ski patrol teams to supplement the team on your mountain. And I'm curious because I know when we talk about taking EMS teams from different parts of the country to respond to major events, disaster events, that there are some logistical challenges integrating those people. Whose protocols do you follow? You know, how standardized are things in the ski patrol world for those kind of challenges? What does it take to integrate them with your system?
Great question, Jamie. We are very fortunate where amongst, our sister mountains, within Aspen Ski Company, the four resorts of Aspen Mountain, Buttermilk, Aspen Highlands, and Snowmass, we all are managed by Aspen Ski Company. And the benefit of that is that we all are all trained under the same protocols that all of our other mountains are. In addition to that, we operate under the Roaring Fork Fire and EMS protocol. So we have a lot of folks that, especially paramedics, that are part-time on the mountain and either full or part-time on the ambulance. And so we have those consistent protocols where if I'm on the ambulance assisting, doing a shift there for a day, or if I'm on ski patrol, I'm speaking the same language with the same protocols, using the same interventions and medications, whether I'm on the hill, whether I'm on a mountain rescue team, whether I'm on an ambulance. And so that when there's a face-to-face exchange, a handoff of providers, there is no change in the quality of patient care that's delivered.
That's pretty awesome. Boy, talk about someone who does it all. That's you. And you understand it all. And that's the cool thing, from the dispatch side to all of the other things you were talking about. Kyle, one of the things you do is communications unit leader, and you kind of alluded to that. But the one issue that always comes up in hot washes is some kind of issue with communications. You want to talk a little bit about how that evolved and what you're doing now and how well it's working? Especially when you're looking at different agencies, like Jamie mentioned.
Yeah, absolutely. Communications unit leader, for those that don't know, that's a position under the logistics section. So logistics, managing people and stuff. Think of the communications unit leader as managing not just the communications, the physical equipment, but the human element of that as well. And for me, from my side, I do that under my role as a 911 dispatcher at the Pitkin County Regional Emergency Dispatch Center. So for X Games, we staff both our regular dispatch center, as well as we establish an incident dispatch for the event specifically, just to take that call load and that workload off of our rest of world folks that still have all the challenges that happen when you have an influx of, 100,000 plus people over a 4-day period into a small valley that turns into a box canyon in the wintertime. For my role with that and how that's evolved is I saw it back when we had a county specific VHF radio communication system for the sheriff's office, another system for the ambulance, another system for the Mid Valley Fire Departments, another system for the Aspen area fire departments. And so it was these disparate networks of systems that had a lot of challenges integrating. And now you bring in agencies from outside of our valley with their own communication systems, X Games with their own, Aspen Ski Company having their own. And now it's, you have to have someone that can deconflict and make sure that there's not any overlap, there's limited or no interference, and that everyone who needs to talk to each other is able to do so effectively. Because ultimately, lives are on the line, whether that's an officer on a traffic stop or that's a patient that's on the hill that we're trying to pass a report along to the ambulance into the hospital, that's communication system needs to work. We've seen that evolve greatly over the years now that we've transitioned over to the statewide 800 megahertz system. So all the agencies statewide in Colorado that buy into that system have the ability to be on it. And we use, we scale up our communication systems accordingly. So we'll take a kind of an interop channel, if you will. So something, a talk group that multiple agencies have pre-programmed into their radios, no matter where they're from in the state, so that when they come here, they go to that common talk group and we can all talk to each other versus having to hand out cash radios or carry three. I've seen even four radios sometimes in extreme cases. But ultimately, it's making sure that everyone can talk to who they need to talk to and do so effectively. In partnership with ESPN, in partnership with Aspen Ski Company, and all of the RF, the radio frequency that's flying around in the valley that week. And got to give a huge shout out to actually one of our newest listeners, I would argue our newest listener, Katie Abbott from Bristol, Connecticut. She's a senior communications and RF specialist at ESPN. So shout out to Katie. She's been loving the podcast, digging it so far. And so she does a similar role to what I do, but on the ESPN side.
I'm sure she's listening to this. So welcome, ESPN. We'd love to get some of those folks on here with you sometime and see their vantage point. But one thing we haven't mentioned, and I don't know that there's a place for it here, but what about social media? I mean, this thing is televised clearly, but does social media have a place in terms of your communications?
So it has a dual role in communications. From the communications unit leader side, it is my role to provide the data and telephone networks and connectivity to allow our public information officers and well as our 911 dispatchers the ability to push out and disseminate information on social media. But now kind of looking at the incident management team side of things, we actually bring in experts from the Colorado Information Analysis Center, or CIAC, that are actually on site with us during the X Games in the Incident Command Post, that are monitoring and listening to those social media conversations online to preemptively alert us to any potential nefarious acts or challenges that are being experienced by attendees either in the venue, near the venue, or coming to or from the venue, so that we can have a heads up and pass that along and take those disparate data points and turn that data, connect the dots and turn it into information. And then we pass that along to our operations section, and they're able to make that actionable and bring it and make that into intelligence.
So, Jamie, any questions?
No, I mean, this has been fascinating all the way around. And I think one of the things that I really enjoy about this is, you know, I think this is probably the third year we've covered this with you, Kyle. And it's fascinating to hear that there's always something that adjusts or changes. You know, it's not a static situation at all. As the games continue to grow in popularity, as the coverage changes, as you get new partners from places like ESPN to join you in the communications challenges, all of those things, you know, watching those update over the last few years has been interesting to cover. And you know, I'm curious what your thoughts are, you know, as far as dynamic events. This is a pretty big one, and it's fascinating to hear how the things change.
And it's really exciting, and it's very humbling to be a part of it. And growing in my role and how my roles have evolved over the years have just been more and more exciting. And now hearing from others that we've interviewed on the podcast and even those that are out there listening who do similar work or similar roles with large venue pre-planned events that could ultimately have incidents within that event as well. I mean, ultimately, right, that's why these teams are here, and that's why we put the hours and the effort and the lack of sleep sometimes into preparing for these events, so that if any of those eventualities that we should think of actually do occur, we have a starting point and a team in place to help manage that and to take that a lot of that decision-making and logistical workload off of the boots on the ground folks, the folks that are on the venue, on the highway, or otherwise in the field, if you will, and have sort of that behind the scenes group that's doing things. And if we have a good year, no one ever knows that we're there besides some of the awesome coverage that we receive in the media here and there. If we're able to be in the shadows, do our work, and we have a safe and successful X Games, then we will have done our job.
Becky, while you're there, do you have any questions or comments?
Yes, a lot, but I know we're running up on time. The social media one was going to be my question, so thanks for asking that, Sam. I mean, I guess I'm just curious if you have any like crazy stories that you're able to share, Kyle, anything that like went really, really awesome or anything that went badly we could learn from.
Well, I think one that does come to mind is that a few years ago, we did have a let's see, we had a traffic crash at one of the main roundabouts that actually goes into downtown Aspen, so between Aspen and the venue. And that ultimately snarled traffic for quite a while, and thankfully resulted in no major injuries, but we did have that then coincide. While that response was going on, the concert venue was letting out. And so that has a capacity, at least it did at the time, I'd say, just ballpark it, don't quote me on this, close to 8,000. And so those people all out, exiting that venue, now expecting to board buses to then go to different destinations, including Aspen. Now you had the transportation routes that are impacted. You have rest of world responders working that incident. And now you have folks on venue looking for a place to stay warm, because I think the wind chill was about 10 degrees at the time, waiting in these queue lines and waiting to board these buses. And so we then had the public health and the humanitarian impact of it, people being out and exposed in the cold, not expecting to perhaps be waiting as long as they did. And so those types of incidents within incidents, we've now planned for that. We've learned to manage that better. In addition to the communication, parking is always an issue as people come up to go to the event. We have a very limited area that we can put vehicles. And so improving our messaging every year after there had been some confusion and some challenges with where can we direct people so that we don't create further traffic issues or overlapping or miscommunications between different agencies sharing what the parking capacity is at their particular areas.
Oh, good grief. Real quickly, as we wind down here, Kyle, your other role, as if you didn't have enough to do, is situation unit leader. Can you give us a quick overview of what that entails?
Oh, heck yeah. Situation unit leader, that's under the planning section. So if you want to plan or you want to put some ideas together for what the goals and objectives would be for the next operational period in an event or an incident, well, you need to have a solid foundation of facts and information with which to inform that plan making. And so one of my third role actually at the X Games this year was as a situation unit leader on the incident management team. I worked with Alex Durant, who's one of our GIS specialists with Pitkin County. And Alex and I worked together to collect information as from largely revolving around the numbers, the statistics. So how active were our officers? So when we're making contacts with people, what's the nature of those contacts? What's the outcome of those? Where are those contacts occurring? Now we can, with those points within the venue, we can create heat maps and hotspot where we might want to suggest that the operations section direct some of their resources if we're having a spike in activity at certain areas at certain times. And we're able to present that so that folks that are going out into the field and conducting those operations, they're able to go out there more informed with an idea of what happened the previous day, what could they possibly expect today. And in with situation, one of the reasons that they really wanted me there is that the kind of the forecasting, the thinking ahead piece, okay, here's where we're at, now where is it going to go? So we actually work hand in hand with incident meteorologists from the Grand Junction National Weather Service office. And so for 3 of the 4 days, we actually had meteorologists in the incident command post that I was working with to input forecast information into the situation report and the incident action plan for the next operational period and answer any weather-related questions that were there on site. So that was a huge benefit, a huge relationship. Being able to have them there was awesome. And so it's ultimately, as situation unit leader, getting the big picture and informing the next day's decision making.
Kyle, you are a jack of all trades and master of all. You're incredible. Jamie, would you agree?
Absolutely. And it's really a testament to the team that we've kind of been lucky enough to stumble into here on the show with starting off with Sam and I and Joe, adding in Kyle, bringing in Becky and her unique perspective on things. It makes me thankful that we have this core group that is able to bring a disparate group of talents and skills and backgrounds to play to address all the various events and disaster planning and things that we do here on the show. So, Kyle, thank you again for sharing your expertise here with us.
Absolutely, Jamie. I'm really happy to be able to continue to do that. And if I can just share one thing that to kind of wrap this all up is that, I'm very fortunate to do what I love, and I encourage you all to find something like that as well. And having that job and those roles that you play, and have those be like recess. You know, for me, this was so much fun that it didn't even feel like work when you're there doing the stuff behind the scenes. And so it's a lot of fun. It's very humbling, and it's great to work with such awesome teams of people on all sides.
We'll get into talking about Paragon here in a second because we want to thank our sponsors. But while we have you on, Kyle, where can folks find you? Because I know you're always active on Twitter, especially to let folks know what's going on, what you're up to. Where can they follow you to find out what's going on?
Definitely, Jamie. Folks can find me on all the social medias under the handle WX Kyle Nelson. So feel free, Twitter and Instagram I'm most active on, but on the professional side, feel free to connect with me on LinkedIn as well.
Awesome. And I do want to thank Paragon Medical Education Group. Dr. Joe Holly was unavailable tonight because he's, as usual, attending a conference and staying up to date with all the things that he does. But we do want to thank them for sponsoring the program. And you know, Kyle talked about incident planning and all the things that go into making events work the way they need to work. Because when things don't work, you need to have your responders be prepared for the worst. And that's what Dr. Joe and Jim Logan and the rest of the team over at Paragon Medical Education Group do. They come up with unique training exercises and events that are based on experiential training from people who've been there, and they bring that to your system. And I can't say enough about it. It's unlike anything else out there. Reach out to them at paragonmedicalgroup.com, over at paragonmedEDU on Twitter. You can find them all around in our Facebook group on Facebook, or over at disasterpodcast.com. There are links there as well. Reach out to them. Have them let you know what they can do for your system. Everything is customizable. They work within budgets, constraints, and all kinds of things that can make sure that they bring something unique to your system that is unlike anything you've ever done before in a training event. So reach out to them. And again, thanks to them for their support here of the Disaster Podcast. Becky, where can folks find you?
Jamie, I am mostly on Twitter, WX underscore Bex, but also hang out in the Facebook group, as well as LinkedIn. It's definitely a good place, as Kyle said, to connect professionally. Just search Becky DePodwin.
Excellent. And thanks again for joining us tonight and your perspective and your meteorological outlook at the beginning of the show. Sam, where can folks find you?
Well, in all the aforementioned places under Sam Bradley or Sam Bradley 11, in our quite awesome Facebook community that's ever growing, and certainly on disasterpodcast.com. What about you, Jamie?
Well, they can find me under the handle PodMedic in most social media locations, so please friend or follow me there. You can also find me as well on disasterpodcast.com, where the podcast lives on its website, and also over at our Disaster Podcast Facebook group. Just search for Disaster Podcast, folks. It's that easy. There's only one of us. And join the group. We'd love to have you in there. And we're always having great discussions. In fact, this week we've got some extra information, additional links and things being posted regarding the coronavirus outbreak and where the best possible information can be found regarding medical response, regarding community response and preparedness, and just general information. All of that can be found. We've had a couple of good discussions. Christopher Chapman from the UK has been posting some of the information and links that they're providing from the National Health Service there. I've posted some things from Maryland's Emergency Medical Services System for provider information on handling patients with suspected coronavirus. So these are the types of things we talk about all the time, and you can come over there and find them. So please join the community over on our Facebook group. Sam, this has been a great episode. I always look forward to Kyle's X Games update because we find a really good perspective because of his insider view on how things are planned.
I just like listening to Kyle. He's just so well-spoken. He's my hero. But I guess for this episode, we could say vet medicine is not our everyday medicine.